Okay, we're starting here on the top of Ayin Bet Amud Aleph. The Gemara left off with a discussion about Rav Huna's position, and the Gemara came to the conclusion that we could not reconcile between Rav Huna's position and that of Rabbi Shimon and our Mishnah, and therefore the Gemara came to the conclusion that Rav Huna must be following the Rabbonon, and Rabbi Shimon was following the position of Rabbi Akiva. Now the Gemara asks, Umi Matzit Mukrin La Rabbi Shimon Ki Rabbi Akiva? Can Rabbi Shimon really hold like his Rebbe, Rabbi Akiva? This is Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, who is a Talmid of Rabbi Akiva. V'hatanyo, don't we have a Baraita? Dish shlosha ilanot mimata asara lebeitza'a. Person who's magdish, three trees, which are distributed in a manner that would lead to have 10 of them in a beitza'a. So this is the normal distribution of saplings. For larger trees, you would have three across the whole beitza'a. For saplings, you would have 10 distributed over a Beit Sa'ah. You saw this earlier in the Masechta. That leaves you 250 square amot per tree area within the Beit Sa'ah. Because the total area of the Beit Sa'ah is 2,500 square amot. And so therefore, when you have three trees that are distributed in that manner, Harigdish et akarka ve'et ha'ilanot shebeneihem. If you're Magdish, those three trees, not only are those three trees Hekdesh, the land between them is Hekdesh, and the trees between them are also Hekdesh. Now, in terms of the trees between them, normally if you have trees that are between them, then it causes a problem because then it's no longer distributed in the proper fashion. So the way the Rashbam explains that the ilanot between them are ktanim shebneihem, they're tiny or small trees that are sitting between them. The Balei Tosafot say, kigon ilanot sarak, these are non-fruit-bearing trees that are sitting between them. And because of those ilanot, we don't consider them to be continuous. Since they do not have fruit, we're most likely going to take those trees out. So we look at them as if they don't exist, the trees in between, and that's why they're a hekdesh over here. They don't take on significance in and of themselves, and they don't ruin the distribution of these saplings. Because whatever's found in between, we're going to clear out at some point, because the most important trees are the fruit-bearing trees or saplings that are laid out in this manner. Lefikach, shupodeh, when he redeems it, podeh beit zerach chomer se'orim b'chamishim shekel kesef. This has to do with the Torah's prescription for land that has been mukdash, that when a person makes land at the hekdesh, there are two possible ways of redemption. If it is a stemikneh, if it's a property that is not your inherited property, but property that you bought, then you redeem it at the actual value of the property, the assessed value of the property. And then, if you have a steachuza, which is a field which is inherited, it's your possession, your inheritance, if you're makdish the field, then there's a fixed redemption fee, irrespective of the assessed value of the property. Zerach Omer Se'orim is the area of Zerach Omer Se'orim with 50 shekel kesef, and that's over the 49 years of the Yovel. So that means each year of the Yovel, you give in a shekel min haTorah, which is a sela and a pundion. A sela and pundion, 48 pundion make up a sela. So if you give a sela and a pundion every year of the 49 years, you'll end up with 49 sela and 49 pundion. 48 of those pundion make up a sela, so now you have 50 sela, and you have one pundion left over, which is used for the payment of the exchange or breaking down the cash when you break it into smaller components. So that's the amount that you're going to pay per year left to the Yovel. That's how much you're going to pay based on the area of the field. But what you see here is that when you're makdish the trees, that becomes insignificant vis-a-vis the land because the land itself goes along with the trees. And since you were makdish the land, that's what determines what the redemption is. So the trees are ignored. The things in between the trees are ignored. In the end, you redeem it just on the land value. And the land value is determined by the prescription of the Torah for a steachuza. Pachot mikan, if it is less than that, meaning that if it is in a tighter density that the trees are planted, then as the Rashbam says, chashiv ya'ar, it's considered to be a forest, the sofoli talish, and you're going to end up uprooting these trees. These trees are not considered to be belonging to the karka or part of the karka. They're just there temporarily because there's no way you can keep them with this type of density. Oyoter alkein, or if they are further away from each other, then they are independent of each other. They no longer take the land along with them because they're too far apart. And they have to look at each tree independently. Oh, shikdisham bezecherzeh. Or, if you were not makdish them simultaneously, but rather sequentially, harzeh lo kikdish lo et hakarka, velo et eilanot shebeneihem. In that instance, the land does not go with the trees that you're being makdish, and neither do the trees in between them go with it. They're not swept up in the process of being makdish the trees. So if either makdish them one at a time, or you're makdish them where they are further apart than the standard distance, or they're too close together, all of those don't lead to hekdesh hakarka. The trees are hekdesh. But because the trees are not associated with the field in a manner which makes it that you would normally grant the land to those trees, therefore, you look at the trees independent of the land. Even when you do it sequentially, we don't say that you add up the trees and say, oh, now you got the three, retroactively go back and get the karko. Because if you wanted to do that, you would either have been makdish the karko or makdish the three trees at once. The fact that you did it sequentially means that you're looking at each one independently, you're not uniquely looking at them as a unit. Therefore, when you redeem it, then you have to redeem the trees at their fair value. Because you're no longer governed by the fixed rate of redemption, which is for karka, and karka v'stei achuzan. Over here, you weren't makdish the karka, you were makdish the ilanot. V'lo'ot, ela efilo ikdish et ha'ilanot. Even if he was makdish the trees, the chazar ikdish et ha'karka, and then subsequent to that, he was makdish the land itself. Kushu podeh, when he redeems it, you separate it out. Podeh te ilanot b'shav yen, you redeem the trees independently at their fair value. And then you redeem the land at its prescribed value that the Torah gives. So over here, what you see from this braita is that in this case, only when you are makdish them, when they are in the proper distribution, and you are makdish them simultaneously, does the land go along with it? And that captures also the trees in between them. But in capturing all the trees and the trees in between them with the land, there's only one thing to redeem. That's the land. Because then the focus becomes the land. If the focus is the trees, because the land didn't come along with them, because you gave them significance, either because they're too close together or too far apart, that you did it sequentially, in all those instances, you independently were makdish the trees. And even if you subsequent to that are makdish the karka underneath it, that's a completely separate hekdesh. It's as if you have two different transactions here. And therefore, you have to redeem each one of them independently. Mani, who is the author of this braita? E Rabbi Akiva, if it's Rabbi Akiva, Avamar, Mocher, Ba'ain Yafa Mocher. When we're talking about a seller sells in the most generous manner. The Choshukein Magdish. And certainly someone who's Magdish. Meaning that if Rabbi Akiva already with the Mocher already raises the standard to say that you sell in the most generous fashion, then certainly someone who's makdish is going to sell in the most generous of fashion. If that's the case, then he can't be the author of this braita. If it's a rabbanan, hamre mocher hu deba'ayin ra mocher. If it's a rabbanan, and he's like a mocher, he says the mocher is be'ayin ra, aba makdish, be'ayin yafa makdish. But on the other hand, when it comes to being makdish, you would do it in a more generous manner. So even though the Chachamim believe that a Mocher is doing it b'ayin ra'ah, at least the Magdish does it in a more generous manner, meaning that there's a difference, of course, between Michira and Hekdesh. Everybody agrees that you're going to be more generous with a Hekdesh. Now, if you believe Michira is b'ayin yafa, then Magdish is also b'ayin yafa. But if you believe that Mocher is b'ayin ra'ah, that doesn't impact on your Magdish, and therefore they say that Magdish b'ayin yafa Magdish. And therefore, they cannot be reconciled with this braita. How do you know this braita is not makdish ba'ayin yafa? So the Rishbam over here says, Ilemer Rabbi Akiva amar ba'ayin yafa mocher. The Rishbam says over here, V'sfirle, the mocher shnei lanot, yesh lo karka lelokeach. That when you sell two trees, then the buyer gets land with it. Delele matnita ne mocher tasfina. Because he doesn't hold of the Mishnah that's upcoming in the next perek, that differentiates between three trees and two trees. We've mentioned this already yesterday, and we're going to see it again in Mocher Tesfina, that the Mishnah makes a distinction saying that when you sell three trees, the land goes with it. When you sell two trees, no land goes with it. The Rashbam is of the belief that Rabbi Akiva disagrees with that part of the Mishnah. Even though he agrees with the part of the Mishnah, if you sell three, you get land with it, the part of the Mishnah that says that when you sell two, you don't get land, the Rashbam is of the belief that is not Rabbi Akiva. That's the Chachamim's position. And therefore, Rabbi Akiva believes when you have two trees sold, you also get land.
And certainly in the case where he's matish them sequentially, whether it's two or three trees, he would get karka, he would get land along with that.
If that's the case, Rabbi Akiva can't be the author of our braita, because Rabbi Akiva in our braita says three trees are the minimum for karka. So that's how we know, according to the Rashbam, that our braita is saying something that it's a hekdesh ba'ayin ra'ah. How do you know it's hekdesh ba'ayin ra'ah? Because of the fact that it's only after three trees and not at the two tree threshold. That's how he learns. The Ri, back on Lamed Zayin Amud Bet, disagreed with the Rashbam's assessment of the Gemara in Amukher Tasfina, and he says that Rabbi Kiva also agrees. He says, Alar Korchach, Rabbi Kiva b'shnayim lo kana karka. Even with two, you do not get property. Tachachi mashma, dafka gimel kana karka, bet lo kana karka. So then, how do you deal with the sugyo over here? How do you know that it's ayin ra over here? And the Ri over there brings the explanation actually that the Balei Tosafot over here suggests that the reason it's classified as ayin yafa is because we got to assume that the makdish is upgrading from the mechira at least somewhat. And then he brings an alternate explanation back on Lamed Zayin Rebet, but od yesh tefereish, delo mikoach hakdesh zeachar zeh deik, that the proof is not from the being makdish, the three trees sequentially, which should have garnered you karka to go along with it, but rather the proof is from the ratio of the braita, which the ratio of the braita says, when you makdish the three trees, that the land goes along with the trees, and then your redemption is only a single redemption of the land itself. B'Yisraelei divine yafa makdish, if you really believe that a person is makdish, v'ayin yafa, afu pishik dishe da karka v'tilanot bevat achat, even though he's makdish them simultaneously, you should have to redeem them separately. Should redeem the trees at their fair value. And then he should have been redeeming the property at its prescribed value in the Torah. Similar to the position of Rav Huna that's found in the Gemara in Arachin. And the Rashba also gives a similar explanation as the second explanation of the Tosafot as to why this is considered to be mocher ba'ayin yafa mocher. And the Rashba on yesterday's daf says the same thing that the Ri says back on daf Lamed Zayin Amud Bet. He actually points you to go back there to see that he believes that Rabbi Akiva does not make the distinction that the Rashbam says, which is that Rabbi Akiva thinks that two trees also get land, but rather they think that the Mishnah upcoming that says that two trees don't get land is even according to Rabbi Akiva. So here the Balei Tosafot over here already say, if Rabbi Akiva believes that a mocher is mocher ba'ayin yafa, then we have to say that the makdish does something better than that. It's got to be one step up from a mocher. Just like the Rabbonan, afterwards when we say the mocher is ba'ayin ra'ah, we say he's makdish ba'ayin yafa, to say that there's a higher level to a makdish, Rabbi Akiva himself must believe the same thing. That when you have a mocher ba'ayin yafa, that means that makdish must be even more ayin yafa. And that we're not seeing in this case, because we don't see anything different here than a mechira than hekdesh. We're not seeing him increase or say that a makdish has greater ayin yafa than a mocher. And for that reason, it's evidence of the fact that Rabbi Akiva cannot be the author of this. Whereas for the Rabbonon, who never spoke about ayin yafa, you don't have to speak about upgrade. For Rabbi Akiva already thinks that a mecher is the ayin yafa, then Makdish should be at least something better or more ayin yafa. According to the Chachamim, who never get into the world of ayin yafa, then when they say that the mecher is ba'ayin ra'ah, the hekdesh could be the same ayin ra'ah, because we're not talking about generosity or a person being of a goodwill anyway. So if that's the case, then hekdesh doesn't have to be any different than mechira. Rabbi Akiva already says people are generous, then certainly when they're makdish, they're going to be even more generous. That's the logic that the Tosafot proposes to explain why the Gemara is convinced that Rabbi Akiva is not the author of the Braita, because he thinks ba'ayin yafa, and that won't fit into the Braita. Whereas the Chachamim who say ayin ra can fit into the Braita. Ella, Pshita, Rabbi Shimon hit. Who's the author of our Braita here? It must be Rabbi Shimon. Now, because our Rabbanan and our Mishnah who said that you mocher ba'ayin ra'a, they said you are makdish ba'ayin yafa. So if that's the case, who is the one who says that makdish is ba'ayin ra'a? and it's equated to mocher ba'ayin ra'ah. The only person we found with that shita is Rabbi Shimon in our Mishnah. Rabbi Shimon in our Mishnah says that if you're makdish the field, that nothing goes along with the field. Nothing's included with that hekdesh, with the exception of the karuv amurkav and the stana shikma. But that's for a side reason. That's for a technical reason, which is that they are being sustained or they are deriving their nutrition from the hekdesh field. So the hekdesh field makes them hekdesh because of the fact that they are on the property of hekdesh. If it were not for that, they wouldn't even be included. So Rabbi Shimon's of the belief that when you're makdisha field, you're no different than a mocher, than a seller or a buyer situation, in which we say that it's done by ayin ra'ah. So we see that this braita definitely follows the shita of Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon aliba d'man. Rabbi Shimon is following whom in the Mishnah? I aliba de Rabbi Akiva. If he's following Rabbi Akiva, hamar mocher ba'ayin yafa, mocher v'kosh kei makdish. If he already believes that the mocher is ba'ayin yafa, then certainly the makdish is going to be ba'ayin yafa. Ela pshita aliba de Rabbanan. But it's clear that it is according to the Rabbanan. And that's what the Balei Tosfot said over here. V'hashad the sever Rabbanan. Lo nachte klal b'mecher la'ayin yafa. Antishapi delit libhekdesh ayin ami yafa. So if you never say that by mecher that you do it by ayin yafa, then certainly over here by makdish, at least you could say it's the same, no worse than mecher. For Rabbi Kiva, you'd be downgrading hekdesh from mecher. That you can't do. For Rabbanan, at least it would be on par with a mocher. And therefore, it would make sense that it falls the Rabbanan, even though Rabbi Kiva is the Rebbe of Rabbi Shimon. Nevertheless, it's just not going to fit here because of the breitah. And if that's the case, then he must be following the position of the Chachamim. And if that's the case, then how do you reconcile that with our conclusion on the previous Amud? Previous Amud, we said Rav Huna is following the Shita of the Rabbanan, and Rabbi Shimon is following the Shita of Rabbi Akiva. We see here that Rabbi Shimon does not follow the position of Rabbi Akiva, but rather follows the position of the Rabbanan. All right, so now the Gemara says, V'kasava, Rabbi Shimon, so now you're telling me that Rabbi Shimon believes that just like you sell with a miserly eye, so too you are Magdish with a miserly eye. That's the conclusion we just came to. That if he follows the sheet of the Rabbonon, that would be the case. Umishayir aro, and therefore he would leave over property. Velakasha. That would leave us with a problem. Hol v'yomkim miste hekdesh. Isn't the reason behind Rabbi Shimon's position in our Mishnah that the trees are drawing their sustenance from the ground? But when you sell in a miserly fashion, that means that you would hold on to the land. You would keep for yourself whatever it is that you need. So too over here, if you're being Magdish, and your being Magdish would then cause you to lose the trees, then of course you would withhold the land necessary to keep the trees in your possession. So how could Rabbi Shimon in our Mishnah suggest that the trees that are in the field go with the field because they're hekdesh, because you didn't leave yourself land. If you're being makdish in a miserly fashion, just like when you sell in a miserly fashion, you withhold whatever your needs are. For instance, the property, protect the trees. So too, over here, you would withhold property from hekdesh in order to protect the trees or keep them as yours so they don't become hekdesh. I just read it the way the Balei Tosafot read it, which is this question is on Rabbi Shimon. It's an internal stira in Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon in the Braita says that a person is Magdish Ba'ayin Ra'ah, and that's why we have to force him to follow the position of the Rabbonon. Yet Rabbi Shimon in our Mishnah suggests that when you're Magdish the trees, that you lose Karuva Murkav and the Stana Shikma, because the property goes, and then they're Hekdesh automatically with the property. If you're being Magdish in a miserly fashion, Ba'ayin Ra'ah, then you would have kept the property, and the trees would have stayed with you. So Rabbi Shimon's position cannot be explained. Now, Rashbam disagrees and says that there are actually two stages to the question here. The Balei Tosafot see this as a one big question. The question is, can Rabbi Shimon really believe that a mocher is ayin ra, therefore makdish is ba'ayin ra'a? And the Gemara says, umishayir ara, then he would have left over land for himself. Ve'el akasha. And then it summarizes the question. What's the problem with that? What's the problem with us explaining it that way? Is our Mishnah, Rabbi Shimon of our Mishnah becomes problematic. The way the Rishbam says it is that our Gemara started the daf with a question in Rav Huna. The Gemara says, can Rav Huna really be holding like the Chachamim and force Rabbi Shimon to be in the position of Rabbi Akiva? Rabbi Shimon doesn't fit into Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Shimon in the Braita is clearly not holding like Rabbi Akiva, is clearly holding like the Rabbanan. So once the Gemara came to that conclusion, you have now have a problem for Rav Huna. How is Rav Huna going to reconcile his statement with our Mishnah? Rav Huna's statement is that when you sell property and you maintain for yourself two trees, you keep the property along with the trees. Because in that case, you want to protect the trees. You don't want to lose the trees. Because if you sell the property, he's going to force you to uproot the trees. So maintain your rights in the field, whether according to the Tosafot, it means to keep the trees there at all. For the Rashi, it means that if the trees die or they age, you can replace the trees. Rav Huna says that when you sell land and keep the trees for yourself, you also maintain land. Well, who is that based on? Because right now we have Rabbi Shimon in the Mishnah who's clearly disagreeing with that. Because Rabbi Shimon says that the trees go with the field. So you see that he doesn't think you leave over land for yourself when you sell the trees. And now we just established Rabbi Shimon holds like the Chachamim. So now who is Rav Huna's position following? Following Rabbi Akiva? Rabbi Akiva says that it's a mocher b'ayin yafa, certainly a makdish b'ayin yafa. If that's the case, he's not going to leave himself over any trees. If that's the case, we now have a problem in Rav Huna's position. And that's what the Gemara is asking over here. Because Savar Rabbi Shimon, ke'echi de mocher b'ayin ra'a mocher, makdish nami b'ayin ra'a makdish. Period. That's the question of Rav Huna now. If that's the case, then Rav Huna has no place to fit in the Mishnah. He doesn't follow the Rabbanan, he doesn't follow Rabbi Akiva, because Rabbi Shimon, who subscribes to the Rabbanan, is learning differently than Rav Huna. If that's the case, you have a Tana Rabbi Shimon telling you that your interpretation of the Rabbanan's position is incorrect. So then the Rashbam has to get rid of these words, Umishayar Ara, they get in his way, so he eliminates them from the Kirsa. I mentioned yesterday, that's what his brother complained about, that he was a little too quick with the eraser. And so over here, he eliminates from the Kirsa Umishayar Ara, and then he says, the Gemara goes, Ve'alakasho. Wait a minute, before you give Rav Huna a hard time, what about Rabbi Shimon himself? Even if you want to say, okay, we got rid of Rav Huna's explanation, his din is wrong, you still have an internal stira within Rabbi Shimon. So the Rashbam sees two stages in the question. One which says, Rav Huna, your whole position is undermined. Number two is that Rabbi Shimon is a stira to himself. So the Gemara now backs away and says, wait a minute. Before you give Rav Huna a hard time, let's figure out whether Rabbi Shimon himself can be fit in and over here. So for the Rashbam, it makes sense why the Gemara asked the question twice. Because Savar, the Gemara asks one question, and then Ve'alakasho is the same question repeated. Because for him, the first question was on Rav Huna, the second question was on Rabbi Shimon himself. For the Balei HaTosafot, the reason they don't like the Rashbam's explanation is because the Gemara, usually when it does something like that, would include the transition word Uletamech. According to your reasoning. So they say, okay, we reject Rav Huna because now we can't figure out who Rav Huna fits in with, because it can't be the Chachamim versus Rabbi Akiva, and originally you thought Rav Huna was also in the position of Rabbi Akiva, and now we can't reconcile anything. Then, Ubetameich, you would say, according to your reasoning now that says Rav Huna is wrong, and Rabbi Shimon. He holds like the Rabbanan, now we have a stira in Rabbi Shimon. That's the way the Gemara would normally pose such a question. The fact that the Gemara doesn't use the term litameich is what convinces the Balei Tosafot that this is all one big question. And they just say that the second question is a summary of the first question that we posed. So that each one has a weakness in their explanation. But either way, we end up in the same place, which is we have a stira within Rabbi Shimon, between Rabbi Shimon and the Braita, and Rabbi Shimon and our Mishnah. The solution to that problem will also solve the problem for Rabbi Huna, which is Ella, Rabbi Shimon, the Divrehem, the Rabbanan, Ka'amar, Luhu. Rabbi Shimon, in the Mishnah, is not saying this in his own position, but rather in the position of the Chachamim. Lididi, Rabbi Shimon says, Ke'eche de mocher ba'ayin ra mocher, Magdish nami ba'ayin ra magdish. Just like the seller sells in a miserly fashion, so too a Magdish is Magdish in a miserly fashion. That means when you Magdish a field, nothing goes along with it. Not the Chwaruva Murkav, not the Stana Shikmat, nothing goes with the field. Vishure Mishayir, and you would leave over. Whatever's in the field would be left over. If you kept trees, you would leave over land to support those trees. Lidid Chu. On the other hand, what he sends in the Mishnah is, according to you, Odoli Miha, at least admit to me, Dolo Igdish El Chwaruva Murkav Vistana Shikma. Even if you want to say that a Makdish is Makdish Ba'ayin Yafa, that should only affect these trees that are being sustained from the field. Not all the other things that you're saying are going to go along with the field. The Rabbanan are basically equating the Magdish to a Matana, Notain Matana, where everything goes with the field. Rabbanan, Loshna. No, it makes no difference. Whatever's in the field goes with it, because we're believing that it's a notain matana. So Rabbi Shimon says, listen, you think a mocher is ba'ayin ra'ah. When you upgrade makdish, just upgrade it one stage and say, all right, it includes these trees that are sustained by the land. Other items, they're not going to come along with it because you upgraded a little bit. Makdish is a little better than a mocher. But that's enough. You don't need to make it full-fledged. You should make it that your makdish is equivalent to Rabbi Kiva's mocher. Just like Rabbi Kiva, when he says mocher ba'ayin yafa, mocher doesn't include all the items in the field. He just includes a derech to get there, or he doesn't leave over land for himself. That's true in Rabbi Kiva's position. Let your makdish be the next upgraded level. So what Rabbi Shimon says to the Chachamim is, you have multiple levels here. You have mocher ba'ayin ra'ah, you have Rabbi Kiva says mocher ba'ayin yafa, and then you have notain matana. So you have three different possible paradigms by which you can compare hekdesh to. He says, for me, I think hekdesh is like mocher ayin ra'ah. For you, at least, don't upgrade it all the way up to notain matana. Just upgrade it to Rabbi Akiva's mocher ba'ayin yafa. And therefore, the only thing you would lose here is the charuva murkav or the stana shikma, because they're being sustained from the ground. But everything else would be left behind. The boar, the dote, and all the other items would be left behind. Chachamim say, sorry, we think it is all the way that a makdish is going to notain matana. And therefore, it's makdish everything, because he's generous in his gifting in that way. Generous to the point of a giver of a gift, which includes everything in the field, like we said in the Mishnah. And the Baalei Tosafot say over here, it's clear that Rabbi Shimon cannot be saying this in his own position, because we already know from the Braita on the previous Amud, if you're makdish a tree, the land doesn't come along with it. As we saw in the Braita, kol shekein de lo gdish im sadeh karka, atzarich le'ilan. Then certainly if he's makdish the sadeh, then we're not going to say that he left over the property for the ilan. If when he's makdish the ilan, you don't get the karka, then forget it. When you're makdish the karka, you certainly don't leave over the land for the ilan. Given that, it can't be Rabbi Shimon the shita tay. If that's the case, then it has to be Rabbi Shimon in someone else's shita. And that's what the Gemara is saying now. It's the divrehem de rabbonan kamar. He's saying it in the position of the rabbonan. So now, once you've done that, Rabbi Shimon's belief is that a makdish is makdish ba'ayin ra'ah. Once you've done that, then he can hold like the rabbanon, in a sense, because they say mocher ba'ayin ra'ah, and his position would be premised on that. But when it comes to hekdesh, that's not true. By hekdesh, Rabbi Shimon is stating what he thought the Chachamim's position should be. He's not stating his own position. And in doing so, then Rabbi Shimon no longer becomes a problem for Rav Huna. Because Rav Huna says, when you sell the field and you keep trees, you keep the land to sustain the trees. Rabbi Shimon is not disagreeing with that. Rabbi Shimon says you also keep the trees in that case. It's just that he says, according to the Rabbanon, who think that makdish is makdish ba'ayin yafa, then that should change the status. But that doesn't mean by the case of mocher that he would have disagreed. Even the Chachamim would agree by the case of mocher that you would leave the land to support the trees. So now, given that, Rav Huna could fit into the shita of the Chachamim, and possibly over here he could even fit into the shita of Rabbi Akiva. That's the question here. When the Gemara says now that we've understood why Rabbi Shimon can hold like the Chachamim, and yet not undermine Rav Huna, is because Rabbi Shimon in the Mishnah is not really reflecting his own opinion, or reflective of what the Rabbanan's opinion is. He's making a suggestion as to what the Rabbanan's opinion should be. Now Rav Huna could fit into the position of the Chachamim. What is the conclusion of the Gemara now? Is it that Rav Huna is now in the position of the Chachamim? Or are we saying we're going back to the original assumption that Rav Huna could fit into the Chachamim as well as Rabbi Akiva? That's the way that the Rashbam learns over here. Then once we've done that, we assume that Rabbi Huna now can fit in both to the Chachamim and Rabbi Akiva. The advantage of doing that is that we do paskin like Rabbi Akiva, the mocher ba'ayin yafa mocher. So then, if we say that Rav Huna can fit into Rabbi Akiva, that just like the halacha will be like Rabbi Akiva, the halacha will also be like Rav Huna. If in the end you say Rav Huna still can't fit into the shita of Rabbi Akiva, only into the shita of the Chachamim, then it would turn out that Rav Huna would not be accepted the halacha. So depending on what you think the Gemara concluded over here, will influence whether the halacha is like Rav Huna or not like Rav Huna. Right, the Gemara says now, b'mayu kimtla to Rabbi Shimon. What do you say now? That braita that we brought before, we're going to say is altered to Rabbi Shimon. Eima seifa. What are you going to do with the latter half? V'lo od. Ela afilu ikdisha te ilanot. Chazar ikdisha te karka. That a person is makdish the trees. And then only afterwards is makdish the land. Kushu podeh, podeh et ha'ilanot b'shov yehen, chuzer podeh beit zerach ha'merserim b'chamishim shekel kesef. Meaning that we do it, as the Rashbam says in the previous amud, to the advantage of Hekdesh. Why should Hekdesh lose out by you consolidating two separate hakdashot? Here you makdish the ilanot, that'll go at their true value, and then you makdish the field, which gets the prescribed price. So now you have two separate transactions. As far as Hekdesh is concerned, they'll get more money if we leave it as two transactions. So we're not going to consolidate it into one transaction and say, oh, you just redeemed the field, you got everything done. We're going to maintain it as being two transactions. Ve'af, ve'i Rabbi Shimon, if you think Rabbi Shimon is the author of the Braita, Lizel Batar Pijon. Go after the time of redemption, ve'nifrigu agavarayu. And then, since you have to redeem the field anyway, let the trees be thrown in with the field, and let them consolidate the redemption of Hekdesh. Dahash me'inan, lay the Rabbi Shimon, da'azel batar pijon. Because we know that Rabbi Shimon follows the moment of redemption. If you look at the Zman Akdasha, if you look at the time that he's Makdishit, you have two separate transactions. If you come to the redemption point, then the question is, do you consolidate it into one redemption, or do you leave it as two transactions? Well, it really depends on how you look at it. If you look at it based on when the Hekdesh happened, then you're going to leave it as two transactions. If you're looking at it at the time that you're coming to redeem it, both have been made Hekdesh now. You consolidate the transaction, you can redeem it in one shot. According to Rabbi Shimon, we would allow you to consolidate it. Yet the Seifa of the Braita that we brought does not allow you to consolidate it. So how could Rabbi Shimon be the author of the Braita? How do we know that Rabbi Shimon says that? Titania, minayin lokech sadeh me'aviv. How do we know that a person who purchases a field from his father, v'kdisha, and then he was makdishit, v'achar kach meit aviv, and then his father passes away, minayin shetei lefanav k'stei achuza. How do we know that it's governed by the rules of stei achuza? Tamalomar v'metzte mitnato shalom istei achuzato sadeh she'in aruya liot stei achuza. A field that can never be a stei achuza. Yatztazo shruya liot stei achuza. Excluded from that is this field, which could result in being a stei achuza. Divi Rabbi Yehuda vi Rabbi Shimon. This is the position of Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. So remember before that we differentiated between a stei mikne and a stei achuza. Stei mikne is a property that you buy. Stei achuza is a property that is yours through inheritance. Over here you had a combination of both. The son purchased the property from his father. So while his father is alive, it's a stei mikne, because he purchased it from his father. Then if his father passes away, he then inherits the field, it becomes his, it's a stei achuza. So now here you have differentiating points again. At the time of Hakdasha, time he was makdish the field, it was only a stei mikne in his possession. Because he was makdish it while he did not own it. Bought it from his father, and was makdish it. It should be governed by the rules of a stei mikne, which is meaning that you would have to redeem it at its full value. On the other hand, stei achuza, once his father passes away, it becomes a stei achuza. When he's coming to redeem it, it's already his field as a stei achuza. And there you'd only have to redeem it based on the prescribed price of the Torah. Given that, Rabbi Shimon over here says that when you have a situation in which the son bought the property from his father, was makdishit, and then the father passes away, and at the time of the redemption, it's already in his possession as an achuza, the Zman HaPijon, the Zman of Redemption, governs, and it's classified as a stei achuza. Since it is a stei achuza, he pays the fixed rate and not the assessed value of the property. That's one difference. The truth is that that's a machloket in the Gemara and Arachin, and therefore there are those here that want to say the difference would be whether it goes back in the Yovel or not. A stei mikne goes back to the original owner in the Yovel. A stei achuza goes to the Kohanim in the Yovel. If it's not redeemed before the Yovel, it goes to the Kohanim. So that would be the difference as to whether it's classified as a stei mikne or stei achuza. But either way, what you see from Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon's position is that it's at the time of Pidyon that governs. Since at this point in time it's a stei achuza, that's what governs the ruling over here, and it's classified as a stei achuza, and that's stei mikne. Rabbi Meir Omer, minayin lo lokeach sadeh me'aviv u'meit aviv, person who purchases a property from his father and his father dies, v'achar kach hikdish, and then he's only makdish it afterwards, minayin shetei lefanav k'stei achuza. How do we know that that's classified as a stei achuza? Tamalomar, v'imet stei miknato, asher lo mi stei achazuto. It's something that he bought that's not his stei achuza. Sadeh she'enu sadeh achuza. That's to be a field that's not his inheritance. Yatz tazu she'i stei achuza. Excluded from that is his field, which is now an achuza. Rabbi Meir basically interprets the pasuk in the simplest form, which is the least chidush. The least kiddush over here is to say a stay mikneh that is not a stay achuzah means that it's something that is only purchased and not something that is inherited. Over here you purchased it, but then after it was purchased, it already fell into your possession. Now it's a stay achuzah. Now that it's a stay achuzah and you're being maktishit as a stay achuzah. You own it already. You inherited it already. So that's why it's a stay achuzah. But any time prior to that, it would be classified as a stay mikneh. On the other hand, Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Yehuda say, not only in that case is it classified as a stay achuzah, even in a case where you were makdishit while the father was alive, and you had purchased it from him, and then the father passes away, and then it comes into your inheritance, as after you were makdishit, it's still classified as a stay achuzah. So that's the machloki between Rabbi Meir versus Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda. So what it seems, or the way that we're interpreting the machloki now is, do you go after the time of Hakdasha, or do you go after the time of Pidyon? Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda say, you look at the time of redemption, what's the status of the field at the time of redemption? If it's a stay achuzah, it's governed by stay achuzah. It's a stay mikneh, it's a stay mikneh. Rabbi Meir says, no, we don't go after the time of Pidyon, the redemption, but at the time of Hakdasha. What was it when you were makdishit? If it was already a stay achuzah when you were makdishit, stay achuzah. If it was a stay mikneh still when you were makdishit, even though it becomes a stay achuzah later on, then it's governed by stay mikneh. So that would be the difference in opinion. But what you see from here is Rabbi Shimon says you follow the time of redemption. If that's the case, in our Braitha, you should have consolidated the trees and the land into a single redemption, because at the time of redemption, they're both hekdesh already. At that point, you can join them together and make them into a single redemption. Bila Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon, Heicha de Meit Aviv, in a case where his father passed away, V'achar kach hekdesha, lo tzricha kra. They don't need a pasuk for that. Ki yitzchikra, they need the pasuk, Heicha de hekdesha, V'achar kach Meit Aviv. When he's magdishit, and then the father passed it away, that's the case where they need the pasuk for. Minalu, where do they know this from? Imahai kra, if they're learning it from this pasuk itself, which is what they both quoted, Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Yehuda, and Rabbi Meir, imalik to Rabbi Meir hudata. They should have interpreted the pasuk like Rabbi Meir. When you have a chance to interpret a pasuk, and you have two options of how to interpret it, unless there's a compelling reason otherwise, you always give the least chiddush possible. And that's what Rabbi Meir did. He gave the least chiddush possible. It must be that there's some overarching logic here that tells us to learn the pasuk differently, which is the fact that they believe that the zman of pidyon, the zman of redemption, governs. Then the proper way to interpret the pasuk would be to have the pidyon govern, and that means only in a case where you had the hekdesh be different than the pidyon would the pasuk be relevant. And that's what they said, that when you buy it from the father, arba makdishit, and then the father dies, it still remains at a stay achuzah because we go bater pidyon. So then what we see here is the problem for Rabbi Shimon's opinion here versus the braita before. So Rabbi Nachman Yisuf, lo, the olam ba'alma, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon, lo azli bater pidyon. No. Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon, don't subscribe to pidyon. They were compelled, not by a logical argument, to interpret the pasuk different than Rabbi Meir, but rather because of extraneous language that was found in the pasuk. That's what compelled them to have a differing opinion. The Baal Yetosafot point out over here that you could have explained the machloket here also in a different manner, which is whether kinyan perot ke kinyan a guf dami. It's a sugya coming up later in the Masechet, which is that when you have rights to the production or the leasehold in the field, are you considered to be the owner of the field or you're not considered to be the owner of the field? That could have been the machloki between them here, and that also would have eliminated the question, because you could just say, Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda believe that when you have a kinyan peirot, you are not the owner of the field. Therefore, when you inherited it from your father, something happened, something changed. On the other hand, for Rabbi Meir, who thinks that kinyan peirot is kinyan aguf dami, then when you bought it from your father and you had the leasehold, it's no different. When the father dies and you get the achuzah, nothing changed. You had a kinyan aguf before, you have a kinyan aguf now, and that might be the source of their machloket. That also would have eliminated it. The Gemara uses this alternative, which it says it's the pasuk. Imlein lichtov kra. The pasuk should say, b'yemet stei miknato, asher lo achuzato. If it's his stei miknato, that is not his achuzah. Inami, stei achuzato, mai, asher lo mistei achuzato. So now, the Gemara gives two options when you could read the pasuk. Imet stei miknato asher lo achuzato. Don't repeat the word sadeh. Or you could have written, im et stei miknato asher lo stei achuzato. But that's not what the pasuk says. The pasuk says, asher lo mi stei achuzato. It has a mem there. The mem, miste achuzato, comes to teach you, mixat achuzato. It's only partially your achuzah. Well, what's a field that is partially your achuzah? That comes to exclude a case where the field could in potential become a stay achuzah. If the father never passes away, then of course there remains a stay mikneh. But if the father passes away, then the field that you were makdish originally, that which is a stay mikneh, now becomes a stay achuzah. That means it's a portion. Mi stay achuzato. It was partially a stay achuzah. And that's how they interpret the pasuk to teach you that even if only a portion of the field was mistay achuzah because it changed status in the interim, that's enough to give you the classification of a stay achuzah and not be classified as a stay mikneh. So you can only be makdish what you own. You own a leasehold. Now that you own a leasehold and you're makdish the leasehold, then when the leasehold expires, the property will go back to the father.
Then when he does.
So then the stay achuzah would have impact because he would inherit the field at that point from his father. So that's the question. When it changes from being a stay mikneh to a stay achuzah, what's his relationship with this property now? He went from being a leaseholder to becoming the owner of the property. So now when he goes to redeem the property, does he redeem it as a stay achuzah? Does he redeem it as a stay mikneh? Rabbi Meir says it remains a stay mikneh, and you redeem it as a stay mikneh. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon believe that it turns into a stay achuzah, and therefore you redeem it as a stay achuzah. Originally we thought the difference between them was the point of departure. Rabbi Meir thought the time of hekdesh is what determines, and Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda think the time of the redemption is what determines. Gemara says, no. It's not a machloket in Svara, it's a machloket in how to interpret the pasuk. They say the word stay achuzato, that mem, is extraneous. Stay achuzah comes to teach you not only when it's full-fledged stay achuzah does it become yours to be a stay achuzah, but even when it's partially a stay achuzah, which means that if it's a stay mikneh, that the potential to become a stay achuzah. Obviously, if it never met that potential, it will remain a stay mikneh. But if the father does pass away in the interim, and it changes into a stay achuzah, that's mistay achuzato, and that is governed by this pasuk according to Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda. But once you've done that, you've now eliminated the stira between Rabbi Shimon in the Braita here, and Rabbi Shimon in the Braita that we brought on previous Amud, because Rabbi Shimon believes we don't go after Shat Pidyon. You thought from this Braita you went after Shat Pidyon. We don't go after Shat Pidyon, and therefore the Sefer that says you don't consolidate the trees and the land can even fit into the position of Rabbi Shimon. Amrav Huna, Charova Murkav, Vishtana Shikma, Toret Ilan Alav, Vitorat Karka Alav. They have the best of both worlds, which is that they are so significant that they become like a separate sadeh, as we said earlier in the Gemara, that the reason that they don't get sold with the field is because they're considered to be a separate field, a separate entity in of themselves. On the other hand, they are also trees. And that means that there are certain rules about trees. If you have a number of trees that are together, for instance, three trees, then land goes with the trees. So now, Torat Ilan Alav, the reason it has a din of a tree is the Eked Akdish, Uzavin Shnei Ilanot, in a case where he is Makdish, or selling two trees, Vahai, and included in this sale is also the Charuva Murkav, the Stana Shikma, Yesh Lo Karka. You get land with this sale. So meaning that the Stana Shikma and the Charuva Murkav are still classified as trees. Since they're classified as trees, if you sell two other trees along with them, or you makdish two other trees with them, then they meet the threshold of three trees. And now you have three trees, and so karka will go with the trees. Torah karka lav, delo mizdaban agavara. That if you sell the land, the tree doesn't go with the land. So they have both properties. They're considered to be a separate sadeh, versus or in contrast to the land itself. You sell the property, these don't go along with the property because they are a separate sadeh. On the other hand, if you sell trees, and these are amongst the three trees that you sell, they will count as a tree in that case. They won't be considered as you selling one sadeh and two trees. No, consider that you sold three trees. You sell three trees, you get karka with the trees. So they have both aspects to them. They have an aspect of ilan, an aspect of a sadeh. You have to look at it, what you're contrasting or what is the context. In the context of other trees, they're considered a tree. In the context of karka, they're considered to be a separate piece of karka, and they do not get sold with it. Amar Rav Huna, they have a similar din from Rav Huna, Omer, Sheesh Bo Sa'atayim. If you have a bundle or a pile of grain, harvested grain, that's out in the field, that's the size of a Sa'atayim, two Sa'ah. Torat Omer Alav, the Torat Gadish Alav. It has a din of an Omer, and is a din of a Gadish. A Gadish is a large, large pile. And Omer is a smaller pile or a smaller bundle that's out there. Torat Omer Alav. The Torat Omer is that Shnei Omarim Shichecha. Shnaim Behu Eina Shichecha. Two Omarim are considered to be Shichecha. Two other Omarim and it are not considered to be Shichecha. The din of Shichecha works this way, that if you forget two items in the field, that's considered to be Shichecha. You forget three items in the field, that's not called Shichecha. The reason being that Shichecha is only something that if you forgot it, you would not naturally remember it, or there's no trigger to remember it. Once either the quantity, the quality, the number becomes significant, it's no longer Shichecha because you're going to remember it. It's not something that you're going to forget because it's too significant. So once you hit the threshold of three, that already makes it that it's significant enough that it's not considered to be Shichecha. Over here, the pile is so big that it's no longer designated as an Omer, it's designated as a Gadish. Given that, you would have thought that if you have two Omerim, and then this, you don't have three Omerim. You only have two Omerim and a Gadish, because it's not an Omer. That's what he says, no. This big pile has the shame of an Omer as well, and therefore you have three, and it's not Shichecha. Tarit Gadish Alav, and as a din of a Gadish, that's none. Omer Sheish Bo Sataim, Shecho Ein Shecha. If you have an Omer that reaches the threshold of a Sataim, then it automatically is not considered forgotten because now it's classified as a Gadish and not an Omer. An Omer is forgotten in the field. You don't forget your Gadish. You don't forget your huge pile of grain over there in the field. So now it's reached that threshold. So by itself, it's not Shecha because it's big enough to save itself. But also, not only does it save itself, is that if there are other two Omerim in the field, it will not only save itself, it also saves these two Omerim, because it'll have the classification of as an Omer as well. And therefore you have three Omerim in the field, and it will save them. Amar Rabba Barchana, Amar Resh Lakish, Charuva Murkav, Vistana Shikma, Banu Lamachloket, Rabbi Menachem, Rabbi Yosef, Rabbonon. When it comes to the Stana Shikma and the Charuva Murkav, it's a Machloket, when you're Makdish them, as to whether they are included with the field or they're not included with the field. Where it says, Velema Machloket Rabbi Shimon Rabbanan. We have that Machloket in our Mishnah. It's the Rabbanan and Rabbi Shimon. Why are you telling me that this is the Machloket of Rabbi Menachem, Rabbi Yossi, and the Rabbanan when we have an explicit Machloket in our Mishnah? Hakamash Malan, that's exactly what it's coming to teach us. The Rabbi Menachem, Rabbi Yossi, could Rabbi Shimon sphere lay. The Rabbi Menachem, Rabbi Yossi holds like Rabbi Shimon. And therefore, that we're expressing it this way to tell you that Rabbi Shimon is not just a dat yachid. That Rabbi Nachman Rabbi Yossi also agrees with Rabbi Shimon, and therefore the machloket is similar. Just like Rabbi Shimon disagrees with the Chachamim and says, just like the seller sells in a miserly fashion, so too a makdish is makdish in a miserly fashion. That means when you makdish a field, nothing goes along with it. Not the charuva murkav, not the stana shikma, nothing goes with the field. On the other hand, what he sends in the Mishnah is, according to you, at least admit to me, delo ikdish el charuva murkav v'stana shikma, that the stana shikma and the charuva murkav goes along with the hekdesh, and the chachamim, the way we're reading it now, is that the chachamim disagree completely, and they think everything goes, not just those items. I think it's like a matana. So too, Rabbi Nachum Rabbi Yosef will believe that the Stana Shikma and the Charuva Murkab go with the Hekdesh, or Mukdash with them. And the Rabbanim will disagree and say, not just that, everything goes with it. And now you have that Machloket laid out as being two versus the Rabbim instead of a Dat Yachid versus the Rabbim. Okay, with that we complete the Parak of a Mokheret HaBayit. Hadron Halacha Mokheret HaBayit.